Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by talking about Russell Wilson. Then Jenny and Bet in for Connor. They're in to break down all the news of the weekend. As always, I wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We are 9 days out, 8 days out when you listen to this from the NFL draft. But the big news overnight, on Monday night into Tuesday morning, Russell Wilson becomes the highest paid player in NFL history for the second time in his career. It's his third contract. Does a four-year, $140 million deal, $65 million signing bonus. He'll get $70 million in year one. A blockbuster deal. It wasn't the groundbreaking deal that some people thought it would be, with potentially his money tied to a percentage of the cap. It wasn't maybe the discount that the Seahawks were hoping that they would get, but it feels like at least a compromise. He gets big money as part of a conventional NFL contract. And so the next question becomes how this is going to affect everybody else and whether or not NFL contracts are coming to some sort of breaking point at that position. And I think the way that you want to look at this is the way the last 22 months have unfolded. And it's sort of become now where the next quarterback to get paid is going to be the highest paid player in NFL history. And this goes back to after Andrew Luck was paid in June of 16. A year later, Derek Carr, who no one was mistaking at the time for the best quarterback in the NFL, he was coming off a really good third season as a pro, but definitely not the best player in the league. He becomes the highest paid player in league history, first player to break the $25 million barrier. That's in June of 2017, 22 months ago. All right, 3 months after that, Matt Stafford does a deal at 27 per. 5 months after that, Jimmy Garoppolo does a deal at 27.5 per. The month after that, Kirk Cousins does a deal at 28 per. 2 months later, Matt Ryan comes in at $30 million per, breaks that barrier. And then 3 months after that, Aaron Rodgers gets a $33.5 million per year deal. And then that brings us to Russell Wilson. So the question becomes now whether or not the next guy to get paid, the next established starting quarterback, the next guy who's considered a franchise quarterback, is going to pass Russell Wilson. And so here's where I think the issue is. I don't think the issue is going to be with your Carson Wentz because the Eagles believe in him so deeply. I think Carson Wentz is going to get paid whatever the market dictates above what Russell Wilson got. Patrick Mahomes, certainly, no question about it. When it comes time for the Chiefs to pay him, he's going to get money above what all of these guys are making. Probably the first guy to break the $40 million per year barrier in the NFL, and I believe he'd be one of the first in all of pro sports to do that. I think the question then becomes, how do you value Dak Prescott? How do you value Jared Goff? How do you value Mitch Trubisky? How do you value Marcus Mariota? And so those guys who may have fallen into the category of, you know, your Garoppolo or your Cousins, does this continue to happen with those guys? And I'm going to bring in Jenny, and because Connor's internet connection and his hotel in Florida, I don't want to make you seem like you're some sort of backup bet.
That's fine. I'm always here for your backup services.
So that's the question, I think, now, right? Like, we're at the point now, Russell Wilson's deal is at, I think it's right above 18% of the salary cap on a year-to-year basis based on this year's cap. Like, do you pay Jared Goff that? Do you pay Dak Prescott that? Do you pay Marcus Mariota that? Do you pay Mitch Trubisky that? And some of these questions are a year or 2 years off. But I think it's certainly now getting to a point where, like, it's almost like there's either going to be like a B level for quarterbacks, like a second level that hasn't existed. There's almost going to have to be a second level for quarterbacks, or these guys are going to find a way to the market. It's hard for me to imagine these guys getting paid that way.
There was a B-level a little bit, right, with Tannehill and Blake Bortles. Yeah. That was sort of – but I see your point. There's like this upcoming group of guys that would sort of definitely fall into that
right
B category.
And I think you'd almost have to get to them early, right? Like that would have to be – like that would have to be your trick. Like when they're still a year or two away from the franchise tag, like Dak, like you almost have to do it now. Because if you don't do it now – I mean, every one of these guys gets paid, the price of the tag's going to go up. So Dak, I feel like you almost have to do it now. Maybe he'd be motivated to do it because he was a fourth round pick and he just hasn't made that as much money as a lot of other guys to this point. I mean, Carson Wentz, you'd be doing it 2 years early. So like Jared Goff, you'd be doing it 2 years early. So maybe some of those teams look at it and say, we should get to these guys early so we're not paying what it could be in a year or two when those guys are closer to the end of their deals. But it certainly feels like, and look, I think Russell Wilson is absolutely deserving of this, the way Aaron Rodgers was deserving of this. But, I mean, there are certainly players on that list of guys that I named where you would say, yeah, you had to do it because you can't, you know, you've established something at quarterback and, you know, you don't want to walk away from everything that you've done there. But, like, are they really worth it? Now I feel like it's at the point where it's like, all right, like, what do we do? You know what I mean? If we're in that position, what do we do? And I just think, like, that's where it's come to a head. I don't think it's come to a head with the big name. Like, again, if you've got Mahomes or Wentz, like, I think you just take care of them. You just bite the bullet, you take care of them. I think that's probably Baker down the line, too. Maybe Darnold winds up in that category. I think it's with the second-level guys where you've got more of an issue.
You also don't want to be the team caught in the bad quarterback situation. And so the teams that need to know that they have a good player, they're going to make an effort to get the deal done. And then the longer you wait to get the deal done, the more power you put in the player's hand, the more leverage that the player has. So, I mean, I think we're going to continue on this trend at least for another couple of years until we see the guys that who are out there now in the field, they're all going to be contracted again, you know, into their second contracts.
Yeah. So I think the next one's probably Wentz. I think Dak to me is tricky. Like, I think Dak is really, really tricky. I think the Cowboys, based on their history, probably get Dak done. So I think those are the next two that I could see happening this offseason. I don't think Goff happens this offseason. I think the Rams are sort of playing with fire there. And it'll be interesting to see the way they approach it because they've always been sort of a forward-thinking team. And they've taken care of other guys early. I mean, they took care of Todd Gurley 2 years early last year. So, anyway, all right, we're going to get into the news now. And, again, like I wanted to include Connor, and he sort of quit on us. Like, he sort of quit. Like I said, like, Connor, you want to write the scripts? And, like, and he was getting into it, and then he just sort of, like, bagged out on us, right?
Well, the first two are stubs of headlines.
Right.
We'll have to account for that moving forward.
Like, he doesn't have the language here, but news topic number one, this is from Connor Orr, okay? This is, like, the guy who you expect to have, like, a different vocabulary for these things, right? News topic number one, will Kyler go number one? I've never seen him that succinct with this stuff.
Very succinct. Maybe he's turning over a new leaf.
Maybe he is.
Starting less is more.
Maybe he is. Okay. I think it's an interesting question. Obviously, I think this is the way it goes every year. I had somebody say to me this morning when I was on the train, I was talking to a team guy, and he actually said to me, he thinks that the Cardinals were told to try to generate mystery because the league doesn't want to have the idea that their first pick or their second pick, which is interesting.
That's
right?
A great conspiracy theory.
I would not put that past the NFL. They drop a dime to the Cardinals and say, if we can create some smoke around the first pick and create some intrigue around the first pick, let's do it. You know, because I still remember, like, I remember being in Indianapolis the Andrew Luck year, right? And I was covering them leading up to the draft that year. And so, you know, they've got the number one pick, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be cool, whatever, you know. Everybody knew what they were doing. But then Ryan Grigson comes out, and, like, the day before the draft, they basically announced it. Says, yeah, just so you guys know, we're taking Andrew Luck. And that was it. And this is before they started moving the draft around. And this is 7 years ago. So this is before – and this is really before they tried to, like, just stick steroids into the draft. You know what I mean? Like, and now I wouldn't totally dismiss that. Like, that maybe, like, the league wanted to add some intrigue to the idea of the first pick. I still think Kyler's going first.
I like the theory. So here, how's this for intrigue? While making calls for the mock draft that I will have tomorrow, which will probably be terrible, but I was keeping, you know, a running Word
way,
document,
like, mock
of
drafts,
notes.
Mock drafts, like, baseball averages apply to mock draft. Like, if you hit 300, you're
Would be a wild success.
Awesome.
I could only hope for 100. So I'm taking notes, and I go to the top of my Word document. The first person I spoke to, so, you know, you get opinions all across the map. I don't think it's a done deal to the Cardinals. I do. But the first line that I had typed was, Kyler done deal dash athletics. And I thought, was this like some weird Freudian slip? Or did I know? That is not what the person said, obviously. They said Arizona. However, in my, I typed athletics, but maybe my subconscious is telling all of us something.
Yeah. I still think he, like, and you know what's interesting is, like, somebody brought this part of it up to me, too. Like, how interesting it would be if he, and I'm not rooting for the kid to fall, but if he fell, like, when the money started to get close with the baseball money, like I had one team tell me, like, yeah, we'd be, like, and this is a team that has a quarterback, but it's like, so yeah, we'd be concerned. We'd be like, like, because, I mean, look, like how much he's going to make as the first pick in the football draft, like, that's, I mean, like, double what the A's were offering him in January, right? So, like, if the money's even, does he have something to think about? You know, and there was, like, real concern over that. So, I still think he's going number one, but it's interesting to talk about.
I don't know. How many teams are there that are ready to, like, if Kyler doesn't go one and then begins to fall and you get to, like, 10, how many teams are there who are ready to just, like, wipe their draft board clean and take Kyler first round?
I think if he were to – okay, so if he were to get by one, and I don't – like, we're going to talk about the Raiders in a little bit. But if he were to get to by one and then get by four, I don't think the Giants take him. I don't think the Broncos take him. I don't think the Bengals take him. Like, he could really slide. And so, and that's why I think, like, to, like, me, Jenny and I were talking about this. That's why this is, like, the 2014 draft class, because it's, you don't know what order they're going to go in, right? Like, I think everybody has a different list and has a different order of how they like the guys. And it was like that in 14, right? Like, no one thought, like, I remember, like, the week before the draft, everybody's like, oh, Bortles is going to fall out of the top 15, right? Mm-hmm. And then he goes third. And Johnny could go in the top. Johnny's got a good shot at going in the top 10. He goes 22nd, you know. And so, like, that's what's going to be entertaining about all of this, I think. And, I mean, Kyler, I still think, goes first. But
yeah,
they're all sort of stacked differently.
I have a hard time seeing him get past the Raiders at four, even though we know that Gruden doesn't necessarily mix well with rookie quarterbacks and wouldn't take that on. I think in this case he might. It is interesting, though, when you talk to people about the rankings of quarterbacks, they are all varied. And we were saying, Albert, you said this, and it's so true. Sometimes you wonder if you're talking about the same person from, you know, Daniel Jones, for instance. But all of them started with Kyler 1. And I think whether that's because they believe that he is the best quarterback or just that everyone's just assuming he's going first.
I've talked to teams that don't have a first-round grade on him. So I think that, like, that's what's unique about this year's class, is that I don't think that there is a single quarterback that has first round grades across the board. I don't think one of them has that. Like, I don't think any of them, like if you were able to pull the grades from every team, I think every quarterback would have I would go so far as to say I think every quarterback would have multiple teams that have a second or below round grade on him. And so that's that part of it's interesting, too, because it truly is like a beauty is in the eye of the beholder thing. You know, like, I think that that's part of it, too.
And I think it's also that way because they all have flaws. And certainly that's true every year. But, you know, last year we felt pretty confident going in that five quarterbacks were going to be taken in the first round. And these are the five teams that needed them. And it pretty much stayed true to course. And this year, it's very difficult to slot. You just don't know. You don't even know which teams are taking quarterbacks.
Right. It's really interesting, too, because it's like, it does feel like there are more teams that are set at that position than we've had in a long, long time. There aren't a ton of teams that are desperate. And so I think that adds to it, too, where it's like a lot of these teams that we're talking about are sort of doubling down on the position. You know, like the Broncos are a good example, like where they just traded for Joe Flacco. But it's like, well, there's no price too high to pay for getting that position right. So we're just going to throw another resource at it and, you know, hope it works out. Like, I think they're seeing way more of that now. So, I mean, to me, it's like, yeah, like after Kyler, I think, you know, any of those three could be the next guy off the board. All right. Jenny, news topic number two. This is another Connor Orr special here.
This is another stub.
Yep.
All it says is Todd Gurley knee update. Okay. So now at the start of the Rams offseason program, I believe that Gurley said feeling pretty good, taking it day by day. get ready for the next season. Pretty stock answer.
And Sean McVay was on the Rich Eisen show, and I know he said to Rich something along the lines of, I mean, Sean did what Sean always does, which he fell on the sword, right? And he was like, like that was like a play calling issue, and you know, that was sort of on me that I should have gotten him the ball more. And
yeah, which you know, I respect that as a coach.
Look, I think the answer here is somewhere in the middle. I think the answer here is it's like, yes, I think the knee was bothering him. I think maybe it was more a confidence issue where it was, and look, Jeff Fisher, the Rams dealt with this in Jeff Fisher's last year where his numbers weren't great. Part of that was the offensive line. Part of that was the whole mess of that season. But I think like there was a feeling there like he's not seeing it as fast as he had previously, right? Like he's not trusting it the way. And I think with Gurley, I think there is sometimes that. And I wonder if that was part of it too. Like maybe the knee was bothering him, but it wasn't like a legit new injury, right? Like he had the injury earlier in the year, and maybe it was just bothering him where it was like a confidence issue. This is just my sense of it. A confidence issue where it's like, all right, like we got to figure out a different way to use him because he's not as confident as in his knee. You know what I mean? Like, which is a natural thing. So that's sort of like where I think it might be. Like, mm-hmm. So there is a middle ground. Like the Rams not putting him on the injury report. And like, are they playing games? Like, yeah, maybe a little bit, but I do think that could have existed there.
That makes sense. You hear that a lot with players. I remember hearing that with Sammy Watkins in Buffalo with his foot.
With his foot, yeah.
It was just like a hard time to get him to trust it again. So I guess you hope that sort of goes away in the offseason. I mean, they really committed to him, made him the centerpiece of the offense. And this is what we were talking about with like values of running backs, right? You see the Rams give Gurley the deal, which really totally reset the market for running backs. And then you see, you know, at the most important time of the season, you know, that wear and tear issue that running backs have kind of come front and center into focus.
And you wonder like, is that going to affect, well, Zeke Elliott now, who's now eligible for a new contract for the first time. And he's won 2 rushing titles in 3 years in the league. Next year, it'd be your Christian McCaffrey, right? Your Alvin Kamara, your like those guys, right? Like that class. And then the year after that, Saquon. Mm-hmm. And so like you wonder if like some of these teams might be like, whoa, wait a minute. Because I know part of the Rams' feeling was like if they get it done now, at the very least, they'll have flexibility down the line where like we'll be out of the guaranteed money by the time he's wearing down.
Right.
So we reward him, we pay him now, and then we'll have a little bit more flexibility when he may be breaking down.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, which makes some sense. So anyway, all right, bet news item number 3.
3. Pat Shurmur says he's interested in getting some defensive starters in the draft, hinting away from drafting a quarterback.
And I effed this up, so I'm going to come up with a 5th topic on the fly. I also said here, the Giants picking 6th hosted Ohio State quarterback Dwayne Haskins at their facility on Tuesday. Asked about the prospect that his replacement could be on the way. Eli Manning said, I figured the Giants are going to get a young quarterback. So I understand that. I do believe that. Like, I do think Eli and the Mannings have been operators in the background forever. So who knows what's
operator,
happening.
Operator. That's a Jenny Brent's favorite word.
They are operators, though, right?
That word has so many applications in all businesses.
Yep. And I think it applies here, right? You cover the Giants.
I agree.
They operate in the background.
That's correct.
Things in the background. Yeah. I do think that like Eli has come to grips with the fact that his replacement might be on the roster next year.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's in a contract year. I'm going to tell you guys this right now. Like maybe they don't take a quarterback. And if they don't take a quarterback because they don't like these guys, God bless them. Because there is nothing worse than being saddled with the wrong guy. Because not only are you saddled with the wrong guy, now you're not taking quarterbacks in future years, right? Like now you're, because you invest in the guy, maybe you're, and the Cardinals might be the antithesis to this, but now maybe you're not looking at Tua or Herbert next year, maybe not looking at Trevor Lawrence in 2021. So if you don't like the group, you shouldn't take one. If they are going to take one, and I've heard this idea, like, well, maybe they'll get him at 17. That makes no sense to me. And here's why. Is when you draft a quarterback in the first round, you're tying your job security to the guy. If you like a player enough to tie your job security to him, why would you get cute and risk losing him?
I agree with that. Absolutely. Like, I agree with that. You might as well take him at 6. You have the 6th pick. That's what it's there for. And you have no idea what's going to happen after 6.
Right. And maybe you're better next year and you're not in a position to take, like, whatever it is.
Right.
Like, I just, like, if you like a guy that much, if you're sort of like halfway on the kid, we don't like him at 6, but we like him at 17, then don't take him at all.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, because that could prevent you from taking someone next year. Yeah. Right. But if you do like him enough to like, literally, because that's the way that position is. You're literally tying your job security to the kid.
And we saw it last year, too, when we had, three quarterbacks go in the top 10 or maybe even more. Like, and we saw a bunch of teams trade up. So I think we'll see a lot of that this year, too, where maybe we don't know about it. Teams have their guy, and they know which quarterback they want, and they're going to be making moves on the day of.
So the Giants, I'm not sure like that they're in a great spot anyway. And you've made calls this week, Jenny. Like I feel like Quinnen and Bosa are in like one category, right? And then I feel like after that you've got Josh Allen and Devin White maybe like that next category. And then after that, like so you get those two, then the next two. And then I feel like after that there is this just drop. And like I feel like after that, like you're sort of at the point where if there's only one quarterback in the top five, if Kyler's the only quarterback to go in the top five, those four guys come off the board. I think now you're sort of in a spot where it's like, well, 6 isn't that different than 26, which I think lends even more credence. If you like a quarterback, just take him there because the guy you're going to get at 17 might not be much different than the guy you get at 6.
I agree with that. It is an interesting spot to pick. You know, at 6, you can get the next edge rusher after Allen and Bosa, or after Bosa and Allen, you know, if you're putting them in order. But the options there have question marks with them. Gary, you know, didn't have quite the college production that you would hope for from a number 6 overall pick. Montez Sweat, there's the heart issue which you reported on. There's also the fact that he got kicked out of Michigan State, and how has he explained that to teams? I think a combination of those two factors. So you would look at those two guys as perhaps the next two edge rushers, but I have no idea. I mean, you could maybe perhaps get one of those guys in the teens. So, you know, there's not a great fit there. I agree. And I think in this draft, there's going to be a ton of teams at a lot of spots looking to trade back, because someone said to me also that there are more players this year, a higher volume of players that grade as starters perhaps in previous drafts. So everyone wants the second, third, and fourth round picks. The problem is you don't have the premium quarterback class necessarily that someone's going to say, I love this quarterback and I want to trade up, like you saw last year.
Yep.
So will there be opportunities to trade back if you're the Jets or you're the Giants?
I think that part of it like is so interesting too, because it's like I wonder now if there are teams that are so desperate to move down that all of a sudden now there are really good deals to move up. You know what I mean? Like if you can like say you want one of the tackles, okay? Like I think the tackles are going to come off, right? Like I think those three tackles, Jonah and Andre Dillard and Juwan Taylor are all going to come off like sort of in a cluster. So say you want one of those guys. It may be worth moving up just because there's teams up there so desperate to get out, like Detroit at 8, right? Like Detroit may want another third round pick so bad that maybe they're willing to deal with like Carolina coming up at 16 and just like say, just give us a 3.
Right.
There could be a really good deal there.
And you could get a cornerback in the second half of the first round. You could really need it's a bad year to need a cornerback if you're picking high because these guys aren't valued. But you could trade back, get another starter, and still get a great cornerback at 16, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think it's like that part of it is like with so many teams looking to move down. And I think it's like probably the analytics thing too. Like so many teams, like the analytics people tell you trade down, trade down, trade down. So that seeped into it. I think that even adds to the makeup of the class, which is like you said, like second and third round is the strength of the class. Like you want to be loaded with picks there because that's like where sort of like the value of the pick meets the value of the player. You know what I mean?
So how do you prepare for this as a GM going into this draft and a head coach? Like what? And you know the top of the draft isn't strong. Do you come in and say like, this is my baseline? Like this is what I'm aiming for. I want to trade down. These are the picks I want.
I think because there are so many teams that are looking to deal down, you have to be sort of flexible as like what we're going to be willing to take for pick X. And so maybe you go off of the draft chart a little bit. Like if Green Bay, like Detroit, I think is one of those where it's like, okay, like maybe somebody comes up and gets a tackle the way the Titans went up to get Jack Conklin in 2016, right? 2016. So like, I think it's just, you have to be flexible in what you're willing to take to move down, because there could be a team right next to you that's going to just completely undercut your price. So that's sort of like the poker game this year.
Yeah, and I could see, you've mentioned this, I think, in your column yesterday, one of your columns, but the tackle, there's going to be a run on tackles, I think, offensive linemen, because there's Jacksonville, there's Detroit, there's the Broncos, there's the Bengals, the Packers, the Bills, all of those teams could draft an offensive lineman. So if you want one, you're right. That might be a spot where you would want to jump up and get a guy.
Absolutely.
And we also mentioned how valuable the second and third round picks are. Guess who has about bounty of second and third round picks in this year's draft?
There
New England has five in the second and third round.
Right.
Combined.
Included, and then the 32nd pick on top of
and
that.
And the 32nd pick on top.
So six between, like, I think it's six between 32 and 100 or something like that, which is insane.
Six between 32 and 101.
Right.
Which is,
wow.
You
which
know.
Is insane. They could be the team to move up to. They could be the team that, like, surprises you a little bit and, like, just makes the decision, we don't have 12 spots on our roster. And just says, like you know what? Like, this guy isn't going to make our team, so we're just going to trade this pick and use it to move up. So, all right. This is supposed to be news item number five, but it's actually number four. Jenny, you want to take it while I make something up for news item number five?
After flirting with the top quarterbacks for weeks, a report from the Las Vegas Review-Journal this week pegged the Raiders as unlikely to take one with the fourth overall pick, the first of three the team has in the first round.
Okay, so this is our buddy Mike Gelkin at the Las Vegas paper, which is covering the Raiders because the Raiders are going there next year. I sort of agree with him. My sense of how Mayock is approaching this, and you can like kind of sniff it out in how he's talking, right? But my sense of how Mike is approaching this has been, like, if we can find an upgrade over Derek, then we will do it. Because that player will come in at a cheaper rate, we'll have him on a rookie deal for X amount of years, and then we can turn around and trade Derek and get capital back. And I think eventually, maybe it's next year, they will get to that point where they are making, where maybe they are drafting that quarterback. I just don't know if they see Kyler or Haskins or Jones or Locke as an upgrade, like a marked upgrade over Kyler or over Carr, where it's time to dive in now. And so I'm sort of wondering if Mayock being as open as he's being is sort of saying, I'm open for business. If you guys want to, if somebody wants to come up and get a quarterback, we are open for business. And maybe he wants to recoup the three he lost or the five he lost in the AB trade, right? So, like, I think that there may be a little bit of a game going there. I trust this. Like, I could wind up being wrong. I'm not thinking this is the year they take a quarterback. If they stick there, I think it might be. I think they'd love to have Quinnen. I think if it wasn't Quinnen, maybe Devin White.
Yeah, and you know, I do think if Kyler doesn't go one, then perhaps there would be a conversation about him to the Raiders at four, because that's the one team you keep hearing. If you throw out the scenario, let's say the Cardinals don't take Kyler, who takes him? The scenarios you hear is, well, maybe someone trades into a spot, or, you know, we don't see him getting past the Raiders at four. Now, those are people around the league, so who knows exactly if that's going to happen. So I think it's a possibility there, but I agree with you. It's just like sort of like they're lightly looking. Yeah. Like, they don't have to get a guy this year. They'd like to get an upgrade over Carr, but...
So here's the way I look at it. Like, I said this when the Broncos traded for Flacco. So Flacco was, like, out of the guaranteed money on his deal, so he's basically on a year-to-year contract, right, in Baltimore. And I feel like the Broncos traded for Flacco to give themselves flexibility. And it was, okay, we're not locked into any single year to go and find their quarterback. Because they were, after what happened with Case last year, they were sort of nowhere at quarterback, right? So I think what Flacco did for them was, it's like, we can still take one this year because we can cut Flacco after next year. We can still take one. That's not a problem. But we don't have to take one this year. So we're not pigeonholed into this year. So, like, the way they were pigeonholed into the year when they took Paxton Lynch, right, which was an enormous mistake. So they could take one now, or they could wait till next year. And I sort of feel like that's the way the Raiders are operating, too, with Carr now, where it's like, you know, we could move on from Derek, or we could hang on to him, and we're fine with him. We think we could do a little bit better, but we don't need to do anything right now.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you're perusing Seamless late at night, and you know you have food in the fridge that you can make for dinner, but if you see something that you really want, you might just order Seamless.
Right. I don't know what Seamless is.
Oh, like, you know, food Grub
delivery.
Hub.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a food delivery. Yeah. Okay.
It's like, you know, online like, food delivery.
See, I like now live in the suburbs, so I'm way too lame for that sort of stuff.
Man.
I have no idea how any of that
this
stuff
is
works.
A universal analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grubhub. What was it? There was dining in was like when I was living in the city, it's been 3 years now. So there's dining in. Is that still around?
I don't know what dining in is.
I think dining in was like maybe the original delivery service. Grubhub was like new.
Right. Right.
There's a bunch now. There's Caviar.
Uber Eats wasn't around
Uber
yet.
Uber Eats.
Yeah.
Seamless.
So Seamless is the best one because that's the first one you mentioned.
That's the one I use all the time. This is a window into my exciting nightlife. I sit on the couch, decide should I make the food that's already in my fridge or should I order something delicious on Seamless?
And Seamless, well, sometimes
and Seamless will go anywhere.
There's usually like ranges. It depends on where you live.
But you
can
get anything you want.
Pretty much. I mean, assuming if it's on a menu.
You know, if you live on the Upper West Side, you can get anything.
Okay,
you want.
So it's not like there's. Like only a certain number of restaurants they work with. They'll go wherever.
Well, you'll get basically all the restaurants in your area that work with them, which is the majority of restaurants.
Okay. Seamless has started releasing like celebrities' biggest orders. Like I think recently they released one of the Kardashians or Kylie Jenner and like, you know, telling all the things that she orders most. And
is there
whatever.
Like, wow. Is there a like clothes ordering company that like is...
There's a lot.
Yeah.
A name similar to that, though.
Stitch Fix?
That might be it. That's what I thought it was, because I was thinking about like how Emily has those things set up and then can make impulse. I can't be trusted. Like I can't be trusted when I have like Amazon's too easy. Like where you can just press a button and it comes.
Right.
So I like I can't be I don't trust myself with stuff like that. And that's what this sounds like. It's too easy.
You know what? That's actually a great analogy. So you get a box every month with clothing items.
Yeah.
And if you decide to keep them and pay for them, or you can just send them all back. So basically you're just sort of lightly looking. You know, the box comes to your door. If you want something, you keep it. If not, you send the rest back. That might be a good analogy for the Raiders in the quarterback situation.
There you go.
All right, I like it.
Okay. News item number five, I don't know. Is there anything you guys want to hit?
How about this one? How about risers or fallers, you know, in the draft? That might be a good one. Like, who do you think might be at this stage in the game now that most information is out there?
I will give you like my faller. I wrote about it on Monday. I think Rashawn Gary's falling. Mm-hmm. And it's not because he went to Michigan. I will tell you right now, I think Devin Bush, who is his teammate at Michigan, is probably going in the top 10, and I would actually consider him a riser. I think Rashawn Gary's falling because I think teams love the athlete, but are having a hard time explaining what they're seeing on tape, which is a player that's good, but the production doesn't come close to matching what the athleticism dictates it should. And so I think Rashawn Gary is somebody who I can tell you, I know like some teams further down the line are starting to do background work on in case that they falls to them. And then the other one, we talked about this, Jenny, I'll let you take this one, is another defensive end, which I mean, I think it's more medical. It's off-field stuff. There's just a lot there,
right.
You know? And so, like, I think Montez Sweat's one of those where it's, like, the heart issue, I think, it's real, you know? Like, so, like, Maurice Hurst went through this. I don't think this is as bad as that. But it's, like, you know, there are teams where it's, like, if the doctor is conservative, the doctor might say no. And you know the way this works as well as I do. If the doctor says no, there's just nothing the football people can do about it.
Right, right. Yeah, so I think those two guys are of a big range where they could go. I think Cleveland Farrell. Yeah, he's another one that I heard.
Cleveland, I can't remember.
I'm not sure. I apologize.
Farrell, right? It's Farrell.
I should have looked up the pronunciation.
Yeah.
You know, another player that might not go as high as we might have thought post-combine, I think, is DK Metcalf.
Yep.
I've heard some questions about drops in college.
And it's like Gary to a certain degree. Where
production.
It doesn't match.
Right. And then I think we also touched on this a little bit, but someone said to me, I don't know why the offensive line class is getting so overlooked. Like, there's zero buzz about the offensive line class in this year's draft.
So those would be my – I would agree with you. You're talking risers now.
Yeah.
Part of it, I think, there's just a scarcity of good ones, right? And so, like, that's why, like, Nate Solder and Andrew Norwell and Ryan Jensen become the highest-paid tackle, guard, center ever in the same offseason, right? Like, that's why that happens. That's why Trent Brown – who, I mean, is like did a good job for the Patriots last year, but is he does he deserve to be the highest paid tackle ever? No.
Like, I think that's all created by scarcity. Like, teams, because of the way football is being played, because of the hours rules, because of the lack of contact, it's harder and harder to identify and develop offensive linemen. And so I think you're right. Like, I think the offensive line this year, like, okay, like, I don't think, like, Jonah Williams, some teams don't even think he's a tackle, right?
Right.
But mm-hmm. I think a lot of people, teams are looking at it and saying, well, if we can get Jonah Williams or Juwan Taylor or Andre Dillard on a rookie contract, I mean, those guys aren't, like, we're not talking about Anthony Munoz or Jonathan Ogden here, but we can at least have, like, a pretty cheap, affordable solution instead of having to go out and spend in free agency for it. And the same thing, I think, is happening with the guards and the centers, which a while ago, like, I remember, I think I probably wrote this at some point in February, you know, you talk to people like, oh, yeah, like, there are going to be all these, like, great, like, starting level guards and centers in the second and third round, and a lot of these guys are going to start on day one and everything else. And I think all those guys are getting pushed into the bottom of the first round because I think a lot of teams are looking at it and saying, do I really want to take, like, a swing on, like, DK Metcalf or someone like that? Or do I want to draft a guard who I know, like, may not play a premium position but is, like, could start for me for 10 years?
Mm-hmm. Another player that you and I both heard, Albert, Rocky Sin,
yep,
the Temple cornerback, you heard he might be the first corner drafted.
Yeah.
I heard that us in the media are totally overlooking this, yep, guy. And I did check, like, after I heard that he could be a first rounder, yep, he had only appeared in one mock draft. I think it was Mel Kiper. And then he is in Daniel Jeremiah's first round that was released today.
Yep.
But that was a name that I heard as...
I would tell you, like, I think it's... And again, I think it's about the position. It's like, so you got Greedy Williams and DeAndre Baker, who are really talented, but have questions about character, right? And then you got Murphy and the Vandy kid, Jawan Williams, and those two guys have great character, were really good players, but are a little limited athletically. And I feel like Rocky Sin is probably the one where teams are looking at him and saying, good character, good athleticism. Maybe not a great player, but you're going to draft him, you're probably going to get a pretty good player who's going to play for you for a long time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I heard what I heard about him was just good across the board,
right,
which is checks all the boxes.
You know what it is? It's like somebody made this analogy for me, and I think it's the same thing with the guards and the centers. It's like once you get back to the bottom of the first round, it's like I think a lot of teams are going to be kind of happy with the double off the wall. You know what I mean? Like it's just like let's just take someone we know is going to be a good player for us. And yeah, maybe he's not a superstar, but like, let's just get a good player with this pick instead of wildly swinging on somebody that we're really not sure about, you know? And that's why I think it's going to be interesting too, where like your Montez Sweat, your Rashawn Gary, your DK Metcalf, and even somebody like Jeffrey Simmons, who's like totally different. Like there are different things going on with him, but like Jeffrey Simmons is another one where it's like there's just a lot you have to take on with him, but he's really talented, you know? So
right.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I think there's more drama this year than there is most year too, because it's just like there's just disagreement on the class in general.
That's maybe because of the smokescreen that the Cardinals were implored to create yeah, by the big shield.
Big shield, yeah. Yeah, big football is telling the Cardinals to tone it down with all the Kyler love. Maybe we'll see Cliff Kingsbury like tweet something negative about Kyler or something like that.
There's still time for this to really, really ramp up.
And we're 8 days away. So.
I'd love the Cardinals to own this and just, you know, like just do something outrageous over the next 8 days that like maybe like post a, you know, they could post like a Photoshop of like Bosa or Quinnen in like a Cardinals jersey just with no context or anything. Just post that, man. Right?
There'd be so much conspiracy theory around that.
That would be great. And you'd be just trolling everybody. That would be fantastic.
Reddit would have a field day.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, guys. Okay. And before we jump into the six pack, I want to give you guys something from me. Guys like me are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. I haven't been to the doctor in forever. I'm going to take care of that soon. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED do not get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where you can chat with a licensed U.S. physician who can treat ED and, if safe and appropriate, ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations, no uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can get a hand. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMQB, complete an online visit, chat with a doctor, and if the doctor decides it would be safe and appropriate, they'll ship you genuine medication right to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really simple. So take care of it. For a free online visit, one more time, you go to GetRoman.com/MMQB. That's GetRoman.com/MMQB for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/MMQB. You guys know how the six-pack works. We do this every week. I put the call on Tuesday out for questions on Twitter. If I take yours, you get a like on Twitter. I hit that little heart button, and you get an answer here on the podcast. Question number one from Jim Bieber. That's at Indiana Dolphin. Can teams sustain a good roster playing paying $35 million for one player? Most of the teams that have rewarded a QB don't seem to be as good as before. An amazing stat I'll give you, Jim. A team with a quarterback making $20 million a year has never won the Super Bowl. If you look last year's Super Bowl, we have Tom Brady on the Patriots. We have Jared Goff on our rookie deal. The Super Bowl the year before that, we have Tom Brady again taking a discount on the Patriots. And we have Carson Wentz and Nick Foles on the Eagles roster. It's hard to find quarterbacks on premium deals that are taking up a huge chunk of their team's salary cap that have won championships. And so I certainly think it makes it more difficult. The key becomes drafting well. And you can look at the Seattle Seahawks and where the challenges are, right? At the beginning of this period of success for the Seahawks, they had Russell Wilson on a rookie deal. They had Earl Thomas on a rookie deal. They had Richard Sherman on a rookie deal. Cam Chancellor, KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner. And that allowed them flexibility to supplement their roster with guys like Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. Once the core got paid, now all of a sudden, you know what? That second wave of players, those guys are now third and fourth and fifth round picks. So you have to draft better. So that's what it really comes down to, is your margin for error shrinks. You can't supplement in a free agency as much, and your draft picks become more important. Question number two from Dan Dribble at NoSecrets7890. Who is your QB steal in the 2019 draft? Because I know who I see as being very overlooked in this draft. I'm going to give you a name that I think – I'm going to give you two names that I think have a chance. Will Greer is one, who I know some teams have as even the second or third quarterback in the class. So that's based on what I'm hearing, that Will Greer from West Virginia has a shot to be that guy. One where I'm kind of dot connecting a little bit more is Jared Stidham from Auburn. And that's where I could see a team like New England maybe looking at a player and saying to themselves, well, you know what? This guy was playing in a system that didn't really fit him in college. Jared Stidham was not a great fit for Gus Malzahn's offense at Auburn. And he's uber talented, and he's a really good kid, and he's a good learner, and all of that different stuff. And so to me, I look at that and I say to myself, Jared Stidham could be somebody who could explode in the NFL further than what he did in the college level. Question number three from Ward. That's at Ward 29-67-29-85. What team would the Lions most likely make a deal with to trade down from the eighth spot? I would keep an eye on teams like Carolina and Houston that need tackles. I think if Detroit is going to move down, it might not be for a team coming up to get a quarterback. I think it might be a team coming up to get a tackle. That tackle run, I think, is going to start with Jacksonville at seven. And I think that's when teams start to maybe look at it and say, maybe we're willing to deal this pick or that pick to move up and go and get our tackle. Question number four from Stephen Dudnoth. That's at Stephen Dudnoth. Are the Jets totally oblivious to the fact that Bosa could fall to three? They are not meeting with Nick Bosa. I think the reason why they are not meeting with Nick Bosa is because they already know who Nick Bosa is, and they would be more than willing to take him with the third overall pick. If Nick Bosa falls to the third overall pick and the Jets can't trade that pick, I believe Nick Bosa will be a New York Jet. That is the absolute floor for Nick Bosa. I still think he goes to the Niners. I think it's a done deal if Kyler's the number one pick. Nick Bosa will go somewhere inside the top three, just like his brother did. Question number five from Andrew Fisher. That's at Colts Fisher. Thanks again for coming out, Andrew. Who will be the first player to receive a multi-year contract that is based off a percentage of the salary cap? I don't think it's happening anytime soon, Andrew. Maybe Trevor Lawrence in like 6, 7, 8 years. We always hear about it. I think what ends up happening is players ask for that on the front end and then wind up, you know, using it as a position and turning it into a big bag of cash, which is what Russell Wilson did. Well, if you're not going to give me that percentage, pay me at the top of the market. And that's what the Seahawks have done. And I think that's what will happen with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. I don't think anybody's going to be paid a percentage of salary cap anytime soon. With the expiration of the CBA coming up, though, it does make it a little dicier for guys doing long-term deals because it's a little harder to tell what the landscape's going to look like financially. Obviously, CBA could have new rules. On top of that, you know, you've got broadcast deals that could have streaming services really adding to the financial landscape, and you got the prospect to legalize gambling. Final question of the week, question number six from Freddie. That's at F. Perez 2231. Why won't the NFL push the draft earlier in the year? It's simple. They want to have you captive for as many months as they possibly can. In fact, if they could do it, they would love to put the draft in May. It didn't work when they did it before, but if it had worked, God, the draft would permanently be in May. They want to occupy you for as many months of the calendar as they possibly can. Their season, on it, for all intents and purposes, starts with training camp at the end of July. I think what they want to do is they want to try to stretch the calendar as much as they can to have people talking football for as many months as they can. That's why it's at the end of April. Teams would love to have it earlier. Teams would absolutely love to have it, their hands on their rookies earlier. They would love to truncate this process a little bit, but it's not happening because the business interest of the league is to have things as spread out as possible, and having the draft at the end of April works for them. I appreciate you guys coming out. As always, feedback at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert_Breer on Instagram, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook. You can get to me there. I want to make this your podcast, so give us all of your feedback. You can help us out that way. As always, listen to our podcast and the other MMQB podcast, the Monday Morning Podcast featuring Gary Gramling and Andy Benoit. You guys can get us on the same feed. That's the MMQB NFL podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll talk to you guys then.